Welcome to the Jacob's Well podcast. These messages are intended to feed you some great stuff that you can really dig your teeth into all week and beyond. That's why you can find it anytime, along with other great resources and ways to keep the conversation going at jacobs-well.net/leftovers. Enjoy the message.
Hey, happy new year, Jacob's Well. Good to have you here. On the back side of your Sunday papers is an outline. Pull that out and follow along if you wish. If you didn't get a Sunday paper, I know they got more of them back there. You can go ahead and get one. I'm Greg Meyer, by the way, pastor at Jacob's Well. And I just want to dive into what we want to talk about today. So I don't know if you're familiar with Wired Magazine. It's kind of a magazine that's all about like what's next, technology and stuff like that. I mean, their job is the future, right? Otherwise, well, that's what their job is. And so the January issue is always kind of some prognostication. They're looking off at what's coming. And I think it's kind of interesting this year. Actually, I didn't even, my wife pointed this out to me because I hadn't gotten around to reading it yet. But this year, so introducing their issue in which they normally talk about the future, this is what their editor-in-chief, Scott Dadich, had to say. He said, instead of prognosticating, I guess I didn't say that, they're using science fiction. Why? Okay, so here's what he had to say. Why fiction? Glad you asked. We live in uncertain times. One of this publication's most important jobs is to see big trends, spot important business models, and chronicle landmark innovations that show us where we're going. But right now, that is hard to do. In this rapidly changing, aggressively agitated moment, it's very difficult to discern what the future holds. That's their nice way of saying, we have no idea what the hell's going on. And they're largely talking kind of like technology and just the future and what's happening, going, you know, all that kind of stuff. But that's not the only place that this is happening. You know, I think like what's happening in our world. I mean, I think a lot of us feel a lot of turmoil right now. Let me name a couple of things. We have a new president in a couple of weeks. Now, this isn't meant to be a partisan comic. I don't care if you are for Donald Trump or against Donald Trump. Really, no one knows what's going to happen. And that's unsettling for a lot of people in a lot of different ways. The one thing we do know is that this will not be business as usual. And then a related but maybe somewhat separate is that there's a lot of feelings among immigrants, minorities, and other people that understand themselves to be underrepresented in the powerful of society, whether that's racial groups or LGBTQ or the poor and others. And I think one is there's a lot of fear and of transition for those people. They're also, I think, at a tipping point of just ready to be vocal, even to be disruptive in order to be heard. And we, you know, been seeing that with Black Lives Matters and other groups, I think, are coming along the same way. Looking further abroad, got Syria, war in the Middle East. We are in the midst of the longest war the United States has ever been involved with no sign of it changing or stopping. And it is disrupting so much on our global scene that what's the future look like with all of that? Then we have what I would consider to be a sea change in connectivity that we're in the midst of right now. You probably all have your cell phone in your pocket or your handbag. Technology, its potential, the privacy concerns related to it. There's a redefining the meaning of connection between people that our technology is bringing to us. And then there's this whole thing about wrestling for control. Are we going to be in control of our devices, or are our devices in control of us? Don't you love that word, our devices, by the way? You know, devices, it sounds so innocuous. Environment, climate change, what's happening to our planet? Can we do anything about it? Do we need to do anything about it? Is it too late to do anything about it? Is anyone going to do anything about it? Is there something that we don't even know that's going to change our lifestyles forever and just hasn't hit the fan yet? Then that's all this kind of big global or societal stuff. What about you personally, just as an individual? We created a Wordle by, you know, kind of looking around at what people are personally dealing with. You might relate to some of those sorts of things. In fact, if you look on your Sunday paper, on the outline at the top, there's this little box. I think there's a picture of that too. And that I would encourage you to spend some time with. You can take a few seconds now. You can do it during the message. You can do it during this week. But what is your, my life was like this, and now it's going to be something else. What will it be? And maybe that second one is just a question mark, or maybe you can name it, you just don't know what it looks like. But what is that transition? What is that change that is going on in your life? It's probably more than will ever fit in that box. But I think it's important to name what some of those sorts of things are, because it's big. It's big, and it's taking a huge toll on us. These things, these personal ones, is, you know, how do you know if it's really a big one? I think when you think of it, you find yourself catching your breath and holding your breath. You may find that your chest tightens when you even intellectually kind of consider it. You find that it makes you kind of just stop. And actually, another physical thing is when someone mentions this thing that you know is kind of a big transition in your life right now that is unresolved, you find that you lean backwards. Whether you're in your chair, you lean back a little. Your weight goes onto your heels. What's that all about? Well, you're not ready to lean forward into it, right? I mean, but those things. If you find yourself reacting to some things in those ways, chest tightening, holding your breath, leaning back, maybe it's a good thing to take note of and to be aware of and to be thinking about. So these things are grooves, okay? We have old grooves that we have known, whether we like them or not, but they've been established, and now there are new grooves waiting for us. Societally, globally, individually, these grooves are all about us, and we know about getting stuck in old grooves. We call them ruts. We know about trying to find our groove, or find a new groove. One of the big questions are, do grooves ever last? And maybe we'll talk a little bit more about all that, but we're about switching these grooves. Now, I think today that we feel we are going through transition and change that is unlike any other time. And it's true. Our change is unlike any other time. It's unique, but it's unique to us. That doesn't mean the change that we're dealing with is any greater or lesser, that it's more important or less important, easier or harder. Every generation, every year, experiences change in a way that they feel is the biggest thing, because it's the change that's happening right now that really matters, right? It's the one that we really feel. And that's okay, but I think it is important to know that other people have dealt with change probably just as like ours at other times. In fact, the change that you are dealing with right now may not be really any different from what you faced 5 years ago or what you're going to face in 5 years from now, too. And I bother to make that point because that means that we do not have to be on our own trying to figure it out right now. We are surrounded by peoples who have been dealing with the transitions, the grooves in their lives for millennia, learning how to do this. And we can take lessons from one another and learn from what has been understood before. Sometimes those people did those groove transitions really well, and sometimes they didn't do them so well. And their honesty with that is actually part of what's so helpful to us about all of that. So this whole month of January, for these 4 weeks that we have left, we are going to be living in one chapter of one book of the Bible. Well, actually a chapter and a couple of verses from the next one. Deuteronomy chapter 8. And I know you're all thinking, why are we doing Deuteronomy? I know so much about that already. I don't need to hear more about it. You know? But I'm sorry. You know, just be patient. Maybe I can find something about Deuteronomy that you're not totally, you know, up on already. I mean, Deuteronomy, like, do you even know what it is? Yeah. It's the country right next to Namibia where Hannah was. Now, Deuteronomy, a book in the Bible, right? Well, you know, what's your reaction when someone says Deuteronomy? Huh? Yeah. Someone else said, I'm in the wrong church. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Good point. Listening to the wrong pastor. Yeah. But believe it or not, there's some amazing stuff in this. And here's why I want us to do this. I was spending some time just reading the book of Deuteronomy. Okay, I'm weird, all right? And this was months ago, and I got into this chapter, and I said, wow, this is our story. It's an amazing chapter in the Bible that plays a role so much bigger than just, you know, number 8 of 20 chapters in the 5th book of the Bible. What's going on here is that Israel, this is a story about Israel, I'll give you more background in just a minute, but Israel understood themselves as people on the go. They understood themselves as people always in transition. They spent centuries understanding themselves in the context of their journeys, learning from their journeys, becoming the people that they needed to be through the journeys, not surviving their journeys, but allowing themselves to be changed by their journeys. And they went to great pains to share with us what they figured out from it, and not always by their good examples of it, but being honest about what it was like and really actually highlighting their failure of trying to do that as well. They are forever people of new grooves. And I think that's good stuff for us to hear and to make some sense of for ourselves, because it makes some sense to me to live with these stories and to read a lot deeper than we typically read stories like this, because they are hard to read. We read them and it's just all this Bible language and old things that people used to talk about, and we typically just sort of dismiss this stuff and say, well, there's one thing I know, and that's this isn't relevant to me. And, you know, and I want us to go deeper than that and to see what is there. Because, yes, they may be 2,000 to 3,000 years old, but these people were doing something that was remarkable. And by dismissing them, I think we lose the advantage of the millennia worth of reflection and self-examination that these people had about what their experience was and had been. It's hard to reduplicate that on our own, just like right now. Well, I'm in this experience. I think I can learn more about, you know, the changes going on my life by sitting down and thinking about it than they could thinking about it for 2,000 years. Yeah, or maybe just, you know, if I just kind of, you know, read the lessons from the newspaper and we kind of pick up a few lessons from the last couple generations of being an American, can't we learn everything we need to know? Well, we can learn a lot. And you can learn a lot on your own, but can we learn as much as a reflection that went on for thousands of years by these people that were trying to be honest about what it meant to be people who are people of journey? So before we do that, we need to know a little bit more about this book, Deuteronomy. And fortunately, there is a group called the Bible Project who created a little intro to it, which is pretty darn good. So let's just take this in. Just relax and watch us for a couple minutes.
The book of Deuteronomy, the epic conclusion to the Torah, and spoiler alert, Moses is going to die. Now, in order to understand this book, we need to remember the story so far.
So Israel has escaped from slavery in Egypt. Then they spend 1 year at Mount Sinai.
This is where they made the covenant with God to obey all of these laws.
Then they wander around the desert for 40 years before they make it to the Jordan River, which is right across from the land God promised them. They're ready to go in. This is where the book of Deuteronomy begins.
And what this book is, really, is a speech. Moses gives these final words, it's like a pep talk, to the new generation of Israel that's about to go into the land. And the speech, it's broken up into three large sections.
So Moses begins the first part of the speech with a somber tone because he's highlighting Israel's rebellion and resistance, which has been going on for the last 40 years.
And that sets up the rest of this opening section, which is Moses' challenge to this new generation to be different from their parents and to respond to God's grace with love and obedience. So he reminds them of the Ten Commandments, like the basics of the covenant, and then he gives them this very famous line.
Listen, O Israel, the Lord is our God, the Lord alone. Love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your strength.
Now, in Jewish tradition, this is called the Shema, because the first Hebrew word in this line is Shema Yisrael. And this became a very important prayer in Judaism, said twice a day. And it emphasizes the Israelites' exclusive commitment to their God, the one true God who loved them and who rescued them from slavery.
Right, because they're about to go into a land where people are worshiping many other gods.
And Moses thinks that loyalty to the Lord, their God, is the only way to life. Now, notice these key words in the Shema, listen and love. You're going to find these words all over this opening section of the speech. The word listen in Hebrew means more than just let sound waves come into your ears. It includes the idea of responding to what you hear. So for Israel, this means responding to God's grace by obeying the laws of the covenant.
And then listen is always followed by love.
Yeah, so love is the true motivation for obeying the laws. Israel won't obey without love, and they don't truly love if they don't obey. So there's this tight connection between loving and listening that runs through the entire book. And so Moses tells them that if they do listen and love, they will fulfill their original calling as the family of Abraham, to show all of the nations the wisdom and justice of God, and so become a blessing to them.
The second big section in Deuteronomy is a large block of laws and commands.
And this is where the book gets its name. Deuteronomy means a second law. And it's because many of these laws we've heard before. In fact, in the first line of the book, we're told that Moses is here explaining or clarifying the laws. So he's repeating and expanding on the laws, making them relevant to this new generation.
There's laws about how Israel's to worship God, laws about their leadership structure, laws about social justice, and then some more laws about their worship.
Now, after all of the laws, Moses warns Israel of the consequences of their obedience or disobedience, or in his words, the blessing or the curse. If they listen and love, they will experience blessing and abundance in the land. And if they don't, there's going to be famine and plagues, and they'll be forced off their land into exile.
And that brings us to the final section of his speech.
Yeah, here Moses says, "I set before you today life or death, blessing or curse. So choose life." But then things get really interesting, because after 40 years with these people, Moses knows they're not going to obey, and so he predicts their failure and even their future exile from the Promised Land. And he focuses on what he thinks is the true source of the problem, that they have hard and selfish hearts. It's as if Israel is incapable of truly loving God in a way that brings about obedience.
But this problem isn't unique to Israel.
Yeah, in fact, Moses, when he's using this language about blessing and curse, he's tying Israel's story all the way back to all humanity's story from Genesis 1 through 3.
So Adam and Eve, they were blessed by God, just like Israel, and given a choice to trust and obey God, like Israel.
And then they rebelled and brought a curse on the land, like Moses knows Israel is going to do. And so these stories, they're about Israel's hard heart, but they're actually a window into the universal human condition.
But Moses doesn't give up hope entirely.
That's right. He says that somehow, on the other side of Israel's exile, God promises to transform their heart so that one day they truly can listen and love.
In the final chapters, Joshua is appointed as the new leader of Israel.
And then Moses takes the entire law code,
the one he just predicted Israel would break.
That's right. And he puts it into the Ark of the Covenant. And then Moses hikes up to the top of a mountain so he can see the promised land from afar. And then he dies. And that's how the Torah ends.
Which is a strange place to end a story. I mean, it's right there at the climax. Will they obey the laws and live faithfully in the land or not?
Well, the story does continue right into Joshua, the next book of the Bible, but this is the end of the Torah, and it's been ended here for a reason. The Torah is written for people who are either outside of the land or who are still waiting for the fulfillment of God's promise to bless the whole world. And so now, as each generation reads the Torah, they find themselves called to hope in what Moses hoped for, a new, transformed heart that one day can truly listen and love.
Get all that? There's a lot there. So Deuteronomy wasn't written so we would know what happened to them. And it wasn't written as a prescription so we would know what to do. No, they were telling their story with all of its pitfalls and their moments of brilliance woven into it in order that we could figure out how we were going to write our stories, how we would end what happened. I think that's pretty amazing. I think that's a pretty big gift that was given to us in that way. But we often miss it. We don't see that. There's an awful lot crammed into those 6 minutes of that video, but there's still an awful lot more that needs to be said in order to really understand, like, how do we read a book like this? How do we read verses like this, which I'm going to be asking us all to be doing together during this month? And pretty much everyone, when they try to read this, and that's as true whether you happen to be I believe everything literally from the Bible, or I simply disregard the Bible and I don't think there's anything credible in it, across the board, almost everyone makes the same mistake. And that is, we read it from our own perspective. We can't read this from our own perspective. These people lived 2,700 to 3,000 some years before us. They're different than us. You may have noticed that, right? But while there are some aspects about their life and what these stories tell and hold that we will never, ever be able to understand or unpuzzle, there are some things that are very, very easy to understand and some very, very accessible to us. Like, for instance, what Torah means to these people. That's something that we can clarify and understand really quite easily. Deuteronomy is the fifth book of the Bible. As he said, it is the last of the five books that are considered to be the Torah, Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, then Deuteronomy. And the Torah has always had a very, very special place within Judaism. It is the base, and therefore that was the same for Jesus. The Torah was the foundation of what he, how he understood the world, how he understood others, how he understood God. And the Torah is typically understood to mean the law. In fact, you've heard the video say that over and over. The Torah is the law. Well, that is how Torah is used a lot, but that is not really what Torah means. And while Jews, too, make the same mistake that kind of all of us do, we reduce things to the simplest way to deal with something. Like, rather than deal with five whole books of the Bible, can't we just kind of have the rules and we'll just know that and do that? Jews have always known that that's not really what Torah means. And so what Torah means is isn't really law, but it is instruction, or it is teaching. It is trying to share something with us that is very, very important. And that is important because Torah was answering a very basic question for these people thousands of years ago that I think is not very different from the questions that we ask ourselves today. And that fundamental question that the Torah was trying to address wasn't what I am supposed to do, how am I supposed to live, what is the right thing and not the wrong thing to do, but it was this simple question is, how do I find life? The Torah was trying to address that question that was burning in the hearts of people, will always burn in the hearts of people. How do I find life? Now, Deuteronomy chapter 8 is not just one of the 20 chapters of Deuteronomy, which is one of the five books of the Torah, which is one section of this big book that we call the Bible. But in the book of Deuteronomy, it is a pivotal book, and it is a summary all in one. And in this chapter, I hear our stories, not theirs. Imagine these people. 40 years of wandering through the wilderness, trying to get somewhere that they didn't really know after fleeing from slavery with nothing along them with them on this journey except what they could, you know, pick up and carry as they went out the door. Now, after all this, standing on the banks of the River Jordan, about to cross into this land which generations of people have been anticipating. So after all this walking, all this wandering, there they are, standing there, wanting this all to be done, but Moses says, no, you need to hear something else yet. And that is this book of Deuteronomy. Let me share with you the first eight verses of the book of chapter 8 in Deuteronomy. It'll be on the screens. It's on your Sunday papers. I also just invite you to listen, however it works best for you to hear this. And by the way, SOAP is this kind of what we think of a practical and sustainable way of reading the Bible and starting to kind of develop some fluency with it. These are SOAP readings now that are going to be going on. I encourage you to spend some time with that in these weeks to go. We're going to actually have a new way for you to access that on a daily basis if you wish as well. So here, Moses is writing and says, this entire commandment that I command you today, you must diligently observe so that you may live and increase and go in and occupy the land that Yahweh promised on oath to our ancestors. Now, you notice you're maybe used to the Lord said, right? And you see it when you find that in the Bible, it's L, all capitals, L-O-R-D. And that really is, I won't get the whole reason why it's written that way, but that's really the name of God, Yahweh. And I don't know if you're like me, but I hear people say the Lord, the Lord, the Lord, and it just kind of, you know, it's such a strange title, but it really is the name of God. So let's just know the name of God, all right? The Yahweh. Remember the long way that Yahweh, your God, has led you these 40 years in the wilderness in order to humble you, testing you to know what was in your heart, whether or not you would keep his commandments. He humbled you by letting you hunger, then by feeding you with manna, with which neither you nor your ancestors were acquainted, in order to make you understand that one does not live by bread alone, but by every word that comes from the mouth of the Lord, of Yahweh. The clothes on your back did not wear out, and your feet did not swell these 40 years. Probably not quite true, but at the end of the journey, it's sort of, yeah, we made it, okay. Know then in your heart that as a parent disciplines a child, so Yahweh your God disciplines you. Therefore, keep the commandments of Yahweh your God by walking in his ways and by fearing him. I leave the masculine pronouns in there, which I think we all need to read beyond, but it's an old story. So there's a lot going on in those verses, and there's four more that I'll share with you in just a minute. And I'm not going to try to explain them all, but I want to set you off in a direction that might help you to hear that constructively as you perhaps spend some time with it this week. First of all, remember that the Torah isn't just law, as I was just talking about. Sure, it was set down and encompasses the Ten Commandments and then the 613 mitzvot, the ordinances, the rules that the book of Leviticus lays out for us. And like I said, one of the things that people do in Israel certainly fell into this trap as well is to reduce it to, reduce all that to mechanically following the rules. But at least in their best moments, Israel always remembered that the Torah isn't about rules, it's about relationships. This is on your outline. The Torah isn't about rules, it's about relationships. It's trying to help Israel understand how are they going to be related to and to themselves, have an authentic relationship with themselves and to the people around them, their neighbors, and to the land to which they're being called and which they are to inhabit and to increase and to grow and to be a blessing to others, and then to Yahweh, their God. How they're going to weave that threefold cord together in a way that gives life. You are maybe familiar with the tradition, but Jewish people, Hebrew people, the men anyway, wear a prayer shawl. In Hebrew, it's called a talit, and wear it all the time. It is always to be worn. It represents the Torah. The names of God are here as a reminder of the laws, and all of these, at the ends and the corners, are these fringes are called in Hebrew. They're a tzitzit, and the way that they are knotted and twisted here at the top is a way of, in Jewish numerology, representing 613, which is the number of laws. And Chris says, "Yeah, you're just running through all of them in your head right now," which is the number of the laws that are in the Torah. Now, one might think, well, that's kind of a heavy weight to be carrying around all the time, isn't it? I mean, everywhere you go, you have the burden of all 613 laws on your shoulders. You know, how can you even remember what they all are, let alone follow them all? You know, who wants to live this way? So that is one way of understanding Torah. That's one way of being in relationship with Torah. But that isn't really how they saw it. An interesting thing is the corners of the talit, the corners of the shawl are called kanaf, all right? That's the edges, the extremes, the margins of the talit. It's called the kanaf. Kanaf also has another meaning. It also means wings. Like a little few chapters later in Deuteronomy, where Yahweh is speaking to his people and says, didn't I sustain you all those years in the wilderness? No matter what happened to you and the difficulties that you had, was I not there with you at all times? Like an eagle, Yahweh goes on to say, like an eagle that hovered over the nest, spreading its wings around you, catching you up and bearing you away. I mean, that's how they see the talit. That's how they see the Torah, not as a weight upon their shoulders, but as wings that help them find the one thing that they are looking for and that they wander for, and they're searching all their lives, looking for life, a life that is found in true relationship with themselves, with the world, with others, with the land, and with God. It is the Torah that teaches how to truly live. And for Israel, they always tried to remember that. And one of the messages that they were trying to give us, and it maybe wasn't the Israel that was scared to cross the Jordan River at this time and that mucked up kind of this relationship with God and their understanding of the law almost every chance they ever had to do it. But this Israel who understand that Yahweh was there with them and receiving them and being a part of their lives. And it was helping them and helping us receive a pathway to life rather than an obstacle to carry around with us, helping us to be the people that we could be with God's help, and this people that could live in this land that was promised to us. Go on, these last four verses in the section of Deuteronomy that I just want to share with you today. For Yahweh your God is bringing you into a good land, a land with flowing streams, with springs and underground waters welling up in valleys and hills, a land of wheat and barley, of vines and fig trees and pomegranates, a land of olive trees and honey, a land where you may eat bread without scarcity, where you will lack nothing, a land whose stones are iron and from whose hills you may mine copper. You shall eat your fill and bless the Lord, bless Yahweh your God, for the good land that he has given you. Now, you don't need to know a whole lot of biblical history to know that there's no land that is actually that good, all right? But remember, it's the Torah is about relationship. It's your relationship to that land. Where did they come from? What are some of the words that are featured? You will be without scarcity and lack nothing. Our relationship with what we think we need, with what we assume, with our understanding of enough are going to be reexamined by our wilderness wanderings. And where had God taken them? For 4 years in the wilderness, they were humbled and had their hearts tested so that they could know what they were really about, what was really important to them, and what they would follow. And yet, even after all that, God had some work for them to do before they were able to cross the river and find this land that they were looking for. Because you just don't become these people, this sort of people. You learn how to be in relationship with the things that matter so that you can be made into the sort of people that can live in that land. And that is something that happens over and over and over and over again. So the last thing I want to point out is that the Israelites, what the Israelites must have been thinking as they stood there at the banks of the Jordan, looking across what they had just spent 40 years trying to enter into. And, think about what must have been going on in their minds. They've been walking from Egypt across the Sinai Peninsula up towards the Mediterranean for how long? 40 years? Now, 40 years isn't just a long time. Yes, it is a long time, but it is at least two generations. But even more importantly, in Jewish numerology, it's 4 times 10, 4 being the four corners of the world. The north, south, east, west, meaning the totality of human experience and so on. Times 10 means like, this is as long as people could possibly do anything. I mean, that's what the 40 years really represents. This is the endurance of humanity. So they spent 40 years walking, trying to get someplace. And while they finally get there, they realize that they want this to be over. They want to have arrived. They want to be someplace and to be some people. And here they are, across knee-deep stream, separating them for what they've been waiting for and what they're looking for, and they are going to have to keep walking. Now, the last line in that verse, in the first section, you'll find in your Sunday papers, you might want to underline that. Therefore, keep the commandments of Yahweh your God by walking in his ways, by revering him. Now, we miss this because we aren't speaking Hebrew. But Jewish people reading this, like, what, wait, what? We just were walking for 40 years, excuse me? Aren't we here now? Isn't this what we've always been doing? I mean, I can see across this river, it's a little one. Don't I just get to go over and be there? And you're telling me now I'm going to start walking with God? Now, you're saying, Greg, you're making too much of a point of a word that occurs, just the same word occurring twice. No. Because this whole part of the Bible, all these laws, another word for them is helecha. Can you say that? Helecha. You're going to hear that a bunch of times. Helecha, which means walking. It is a name that is given to the law. So often, like Torah is often understood as law, halacha is also often understood as law. Halacha does not actually mean law. It is the word for walking. To be in obedience to God isn't to follow the rules, it is to walk with God. To always be heading towards a new groove. It is to be on the move. It is to be in process. It is to be on a journey. And that is not something you just do to get over it, but it is what you do. This is the story of Helicha, which means walking. And this is what we are called to do as well. And not just walking, but walking the ways that Yahweh your God shows you, the ways that have tested your heart, the ways that have humbled you from trying it on your own way, the ways that have shown you that you are never forgotten or abandoned, and that it is not a weight on your shoulders, but wings that will bear you up. And that isn't about doing right, but about living in relationship with yourself and with God and with others. So your transitions that you are dealing with now, those ones that make you catch your breath and lean back on your heels, maybe the ones that you popped into that little chart of was and will be, it is our temptation to want to arrive, to want to get from, you know, column A to column B and have that be all done. But it won't. It doesn't work that way. Column B isn't all it's cracked up to be from our view in column A in the first place, and maybe you're even afraid of column B. But your life, my life, is not a series of nice plateaus with short, unfortunate interruptions that are keeping us from being in this nice place of equilibrium, those things that, those naughty transitions that we'd rather not have, but rather your life is a helicha, a walking, a journey, a process. In its midst, there are pauses that we are tempted to think of as equilibriums. We've found it now. We've got it. But it will never be that. Those are temptations. Those are temptations because they tempt us to think that life could be static instead of something that's full of growth and change and new hope and possibilities. It's a temptation because if we park there too long at that place that we finally get to, it makes it all the harder for us to get moving again and to discover what's next and where we're called next and how we are going to be the people that we need to be in that new moment. But to take the words from Deuteronomy, Yahweh, your God, doesn't want to tell you how to walk, but wants to walk with you. And Yahweh, your God, doesn't want to tell you how to weave your life, but wants to be woven into your life. So that's sort of what January is going to be about for us. We're going to be spending this time standing on the banks of Jordan. We can't go back. There's no going back. We can't live there, but we do have to go forward. And so we're going to find ways that we can be doing that together. And I am going to encourage you to be spending time with the book of Deuteronomy. I also really encourage you to spend time with group life. This is something that we cannot do alone. We need one another for support and for encouragement, for advice and for guidance, and I think that's pretty important. And so practice soap through these weeks as well. And, you know, if you haven't ever really done it before, maybe consider God's word to be surprising, to be more than, oh, I'm supposed to do this, it was written a long time ago, and I'm supposed to just believe it. No, it isn't there for you to believe it. It is there because it is some hard-fought wisdom of people weaving their life with one another and with God and trying to share it in ways that it can be kanaf, it can be wings for you as well.
Thanks for listening. If you found this podcast valuable, please pass it along to others. And we'd love to hear from you too. You can email us at info@jacobs-well.net or message Jacobs Well Minneapolis on Facebook. We see what we do as a community really making a difference for people. Since you're listening, you probably have too. If you'd like to make a donation to support this work, you can find ways at jacobs-well.net/give. Thanks. Listen again next week or join us in person Sunday mornings at 10:30.